Good.
I got a lot of outros on the drum.
Go ahead and get started.
All right. The local government committee will now be come to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Vice Chair.
Here.
Vice Chair Esp.
Here.
Vice Chair Boldman.
Here.
President Blaisdell.
Excused.
Senator Boland.
Here.
Senator Ellsworth.
Excused.
Senator Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Senator Friedel.
Here.
Senator Morjo.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Excused.
Oh, Chris is on?
He was just on, so.
Chairman Gauthier.
Here.
Thank you. There will be a few announcements before we get started. Please silence your cell phones. If you must take a call, please step outside of the committee room. If you wish to give testimony, please sign in at the door, providing your name and affiliation. Please note that the information that you are going to provide in your testimony is public record. The following bills have been scheduled for hearings today: House Bill 292, 304, and House Bill 259. However, we will be going into executive action first, as we have a couple people that are having some issues with internet, so we will do executive action first. The executive action will be on House Bill 49, House Bill 220, and House Bill 268.
Mr. Chairman, I will move the bills if you desire.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead.
We will open executive action on House Bill 49.
Mr. Chair, I'll move do concur on House Bill 49 by Representative Beattie.
Is there any discussion on the bill?
Question.
This is 49.
Okay.
Yes. A question has been called. We will do a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
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 All say no. Motion is passed unanimously. Are there any proxies? Excuse me, we just assume that everybody's proxied at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
We don't need to do proxies if it's a voice vote. So.
Thank you, sir. All right, so we will go in to the next bill. That will be House Bill 220. Is there any motions on House Bill 220?
Mr. Chair, I'll move do you concur on House Bill 220?
Thank you. Is there any discussion on House Bill 220? Seeing none, we'll do a voice vote again. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And all opposed say no. All opposed say no. House Bill 220 unanimously passes local government. We will do the last one today for executive action. That'll be House Bill 268. Is there any motions on House Bill 268?
Mr. Chairman, do you concur on House Bill 268?
Are there any discussion on the bill?
No, this is just another bill that came out 99-0 in the House. It's a good bill. Let's pass it.
Thank you. Seeing none, all in favor say, let's do a voice roll,
yep,
or a voice call. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Ayes have it. House Bill 268 has passed local government.
Mr. Chair, can we sign carriers for those bills as well?
Sounds like a perfect opportunity to do that. Who would like to carry House Bill 49?
Mr. Vice Chair, I think that's you.
Oh.
I'm going to sign the other two.
We will sign House Bill 49 to Vice Chair Boldman, and we will sign House Bill 220 and House Bill 268 to Senator Esp. Good. All right, we are now going to go into hearing. Are we good?
Yeah.
All right. We're doing 259 last. Apparently the two bills are pretty quick, so. All right. We will now hear House Bill 292 by sponsor Representative Custer.
Sure.
Representative Custer, please open on your bill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Geraldine Custer, spelled C-U-S-T-E-R. I represent House District 39 out of Eastern Montana. And today I have a nice little simple bill for you. It's a kind of a cleanup bill. It's House Bill 292, and it was requested by the Montana Land Title Association and supported by their members across the state. The representatives of the organization are here today in person and to offer information in support of the simple measure and answer questions. The intent of the Senate Bill or House Bill 292 is to modernize current laws and definitions related to title insurance. In current law 76-3-612, it requires an abstract for the review process for a new subdivision and also refers to a title abstractor. In addition, it states that a subdivider shall submit with a final plat a certificate issued by an authorized title abstractor. These are outdated industry terms and no longer relevant. As the proponents will explain, the actual practice is for a title insurance producer to provide a product called a subdivision guarantee for the review process. The subdivision guarantee is a form of guarantee that is approved by the state auditor and commissioner of insurance. The changes called for in Senate Bill 292 are designed to modernize this area of the law and provide consistency with the Title Insurance Act. And with that, I'll sit down and I'll let the professionals take over. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. We'll go into testimony. Make sure when you do step up to speak, please state your name and spell your last name and who you represent for the record. If you have any exhibits or written testimony, please give it to the secretary. Please not read your testimony or repeat what the previous person has said. Thank you. We will now open for proponents in the room. Proponents on House Bill 292.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is William Gowen, G-O-W-E-N, and I'm here representing the Montana Land Title Association, a member of its legislative committee and a past president. I stand here in support, as our organization does, of House Bill 292. Way back when, in the 80s, there was a decision to remove all of the nominated boards that oversee different industries. That quickly went away, but it wasn't before they got through AB, and so the Board of Abstractors was removed. Since we don't really do abstracts anymore, very little, we do title insurance products, and the replacement of that is the subdivision guarantee. That document basically tells the county and the reviewers for subdivision what liens, easements, and other items need to be dealt with in that process, so there isn't anybody left out when land changes are made. It's a very simple product, and it is approved by our insurance commissioner. So I do ask for a due pass. It is what we use every day, and the abstract is no longer even relevant. So I do ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more proponents? Any more proponents in the room or on the hallway for House Bill 292? Any online?
No, Mr. Chair.
I don't see any informational. Any questions from the committee? Seeing no questions from the committee, Representative, if you'd like to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the hearing, and I hope for a due pass. And did you have someone in mind to carry this in the Senate? I would suggest maybe Senator Gauthier.
I will take it. Thank you.
Thank you.
If House Bill 292 does pass, we will have Senator Gauthier carry it for you, Representative.
Thank you.
You have a good weekend, sir, ma'am. That ends the hearing on House Bill 292. Right, that'd be awesome. All right, we will now open up the hearing for House Bill 304, sponsored by Representative Gardner.
Thank you.
Please open on your bill.
Thank you, Frank Garner from House District 7 in Kalispell. Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. Members of the committee. Yes?
Please spell your last name for the record, sir.
Thank you. It's Garner, G-A-R-N-E-R. And I'm here today to present House Bill number 305, and this is a bill to change a definition related to community land trusts. Real quick, community land trusts are used across the state. They've been in, been around for a long time and help provide additional affordable housing opportunities for folks. And I'm sure when you hear from the proponents, you'll hear a little bit more about this. They're used effectively, certainly in my district, and I've been a proponent of them for some time. One of the issues they've had before is in the definition of housing units when trying to get some of these things registered. So this is just a clarification to make sure that we're more specific on it. So the good news is we don't have to worry about a fiscal note on this one. We're just asking to change a few words on a page to make this opportunity a little better and easier for folks to use, and I would urge due pass.
Thank you, Representative. We do not have any we're going to go to the proponents again. Please state your name, spell it for the record. It looks like I do not have any proponents in the hallway or in the room. We will go to proponents online. Mr. Cole?
Yeah, first up, Mr. Chair, Hermina Harold.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. If you could spell your name for the record and your affiliation, thank you.
Yes, Hermina Harold. That's H-E-R-M-I-N-A-H-A-R-O-L-D. I'm the Executive Director of Trust Montana. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. Trust Montana is a statewide community land trust. We work to increase homeownership opportunities in the state via the community land trust tool. And community land trusts are private nonprofits that own land for the purpose of preserving homes people can afford. Trust Montana properties in Belgrade, Red Lodge, Bozeman, Livingston, and Missoula provide equity earning opportunity for families who would otherwise be renting. We partner with Habitat for Humanity affiliates, municipalities, developers, and other nonprofits to bring more homeownership opportunity to Montana. I am testifying to ask that this committee votes to move this language cleanup bill forward. The statute as it stands now is not clear when it comes to forms of housing units that can be built on CLT land. The changes being proposed by Representative Garner will help to ensure that lenders, realtors, developers, municipalities, and appraisers are on the same page about community land trusts. Trust Montana has run into some challenges with the language as it is now. The definition confused a county clerk who understood the language in a way that precluded townhomes from being on CLT land. We had to spend extra money on attorney fees and recording fees as a result, and it created complications with our development. Lessening confusion by clarifying language around community land trusts will greatly help us and other CLTs to provide more homeownership opportunity for working Montanans. This small change will help to ensure developers can create more homes for Montanans without adding unnecessary development costs. We really appreciate you hearing this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Mike Nugent online. Please spell your name and for the record and your affiliation.
My name is Mike Nugent, N-U-G-E-N-T. I am here today speaking on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thanks for the opportunity to speak. Like I said, I'm Mike Nugent. I'm the Vice President and Managing Broker of a large real estate brokerage in several Montana markets. And I'm speaking today on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors and its roughly 5,000 real estate professionals across Montana. MAR supports HB 304 to make the Community Land Trust tool more accessible in our collective efforts to address attainable housing issues throughout Montana. This tool can be used to increase home ownership opportunities for Montana citizens to earn equity and participate in the housing market. Community Land Trust housing is one part of the package of solutions we feel can help to address the housing crisis we are experiencing in many communities across our state. We feel this bill can remove unintentional barriers to the use of the tool and encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Jacob Kuntz.
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing Jacob Kuntz online. Would you like to go to Kelly Lynch?
Let's go to Kelly Lynch. Mr. Cole.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. I'm the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We represent all 127 incorporated cities and towns in Montana. This bill will help clarify the law to help community land trusts, which helps affordable housing, and we rise in support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Did we get a hold of Mr. Kuntz?
I'm not seeing him, Mr. Chair. I guess not today.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Do we have any opponents online, Mr. Cole?
No opponents or informational witnesses, Mr. Chair.
And I see there is none out in the hallway. Any questions from the committee? Senator Boland.
Thank you. I'm trying to follow this, Mr. Chairman. So am I correct in assuming that the Community Land Trust is owned by somebody else, and housing is going to be built on top of that land, correct?
Senator Boland, who are you directing to?
Anybody that can answer it.
Would you like to answer that, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. That's essentially what we're talking about.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none. Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the good hearing, and this has had nothing but proponents, no opponents along the way. Simple fix to help make this more readily available to folks in the state. Thank you.
Representative, who would you like to carry your bill if it gets passed?
Senator Fitzpatrick is, it will be his honor. He just doesn't know it yet.
Hey, you snooze, you lose, right?
Yeah.
That will end the hearing on House Bill 304. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, now we will be opening our hearing on House Bill 259. Representative, would you like to open up on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sue Vinton. I represent House District 56 in Yellowstone County, and I'm pleased to be here before Senate Local Government. And I bring to you House Bill 259. Housing affordability is an issue affecting a number of Montanans, especially some of those in our fastest growing cities, and it's an issue with multifaceted causes. My husband and I co-own a small construction company. We see the impacts of rising housing prices in our own home building business all the time. We are all looking for solutions to make sure our fellow Montanans have safe and comfortable homes they can afford. However, with growing frequency, some of our cities and towns are either not recognizing or in fact ignoring the various factors that impact housing costs. Those factors are primarily lumber, labor, lots, and laws. It seems that some local governments find the solution of inclusionary zoning attractive because cities and towns can say they have done something for affordable housing by passing the entire burden of cost and compliance upon a single industry. Inclusionary zoning is at its simplest, requiring either by ordinance or as conditions of approval on a subdivision by subdivision basis that a certain amount of real estate be set aside for sale, often permanently, at a specified price point or income level. Typically, this is a percentage of the average local annual income. Or they may require payment in lieu of donation. The reality is that inclusionary zoning has failed time and again across the country, including in Bozeman. Municipalities continue to look at inclusionary zoning as the easy solution, despite the impact such an intrusive mandate has on the market and cost shifting to other properties. In actuality, inclusionary zoning ends up having the exact opposite effect on housing affordability because it is the exact wrong tool for the job. What House Bill 259 does is quite simple and is laid out in Section 1 and then repeated throughout the text of the bill. House Bill 259 prohibits local governments from requiring, either by ordinance or as conditions of approval of new development, that a certain amount of real estate be set aside for sale at a specified price point or income level, or requiring payment in lieu of donation. House Bill 259 in no way prevents local governments from incentivizing development of affordable housing or otherwise developing creative solutions for housing needs. I'll step aside for our proponents and opponents and look forward to a good hearing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Just before we get started, it sounds like we're going to have a lot of proponents and opponents on this bill. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a three-minute time limit on each person. Please, when you come up, state your name, spell it, and tell me who you represent for the record. Also, if you have any exhibits or any written testimony, please give it to my secretary to my right here. Please try not to repeat what the last person said, just for the brevity of the situation. So what we will do is I was also asked to... to help this bill out, we're going to have a couple in-person and online proponents. So what we will do first is we will go for Abigail St. Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Abigail St. Lawrence, that's S-T period, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. On behalf of the approximately 1,500 businesses across the state of Montana that make up the Montana Building Industry Association. As you heard from Representative Vinton in her excellent opening, housing affordability is a multidimensional problem, which calls for a multi-pronged approach with buy-in across society. Unfortunately, inclusionary zoning, and again, as Representative Vinton said, when we talk about that, we are talking about one very specific thing, and that is artificially imposed price caps on the sale of private property. It relies on a single industry to address a community-wide problem, and it does not work. Inclusionary zoning has failed across the country to result in any appreciable positive impact on housing affordability. In Bozeman, where inclusionary zoning was first adopted in Montana and is one of only two places where it has been adopted formally here in Montana, the reality is that their policy has failed to result in any appreciable significant gain in affordable housing units in Montana. That's according to the city's own dashboard available on their website. And this is contrary to the city's findings when they adopted the inclusionary zoning ordinance that it would, quote, substantially advance affordable housing. Meanwhile, developers have reported modifying plans to build within Bozeman city limits because the cost shifting of inclusionary zoning ordinance does not make development pencil out. This is especially the case in Bozeman because the inclusionary zoning homes must have all the same amenities as all the other homes built within a subdivision. Further, Bozeman even dictates a marketing plan. After 120 days, you can go ahead and sell at a higher price than required by the ordinance, but then you have to pay the difference, so it doesn't matter. You sell the home, but have to hand the difference in the money over to the city. We received the same reports from Whitefish, which recently adopted an inclusionary zoning ordinance. And in Whitefish, they require a blanket 20% donation regardless of the size of the subdivision and regardless of whether the construction is for either permanent sale or for rental. We've also seen that not only does inclusionary zoning, even when if it's applicable to subdivisions of certain sizes, fail to result in any appreciable gain in affordable housing, but it also encourages small piecemeal development rather than the larger planned unit developments that municipalities purport to prefer, as such development is really how you structure sustainable communities with housing at multiple income levels. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bottom line is inclusionary zoning does not work. MBIA has been and will continue to be, not only throughout this session, but in previous and subsequent sessions, a proud supporter of policies and programs that actually do result in affordable housing solutions for Montanans. However, inclusionary zoning is not one of those policies. We would ask for a due pass on HB 259. And if I may, with the Chair's permission, I also have letters of support from Daniel Brooks with the Billings Chamber of Commerce and from Donovan Bell, who is with the Levitt Group in Bozeman, who are unable to be here today.
I give it to my secretary. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will go online for Jesse Walters. Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jesse Walthers, spelled W-A-L-T-H-E-R. I am representing the Flathead Building Association based in Kalispell. I am testifying on behalf of the FBA as the builders in the Flathead are united on this issue, but we did not want to put an individual builder out in front. Many were concerned they may face challenges on proposed projects in the future, so that is why I am here representing our group today. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 259. The Flathead Building Association is a not-for-profit organization founded in 1978. We have approximately 160 members made up of local builders and related local building industry trades and businesses. Our organization values affordable housing and home ownership. It is part of our mission statement, but we feel inclusionary zoning is an ineffective and unreasonable tool. It does not result in more affordable housing availability. It puts an unfair financial burden on one type of business, builders and developers. It discourages development and it drives up the overall cost of housing. It creates more challenges and complications to the affordable housing problem than it solves. We have seen this play out locally in Whitefish. Whitefish City Council adopted their strategic housing plan in 2017, aimed at addressing an affordable unit shortfall. A key component of this plan is a mandatory inclusionary zoning policy named Whitefish Legacy Homes Program. This program, which started about 2 years ago, requires that 20% of homes in all new major or minor subdivisions be made available at a price affordable for the county's median income and deed restricted for long-term affordable housing. Originally, the plan applied to housing units of 8 units or more. As of November 2020, after about 18 months of the program, only one project had been approved that would result in more affordable housing in Whitefish. Whitefish recognized the inclusionary zoning program was not working, but instead of recognizing the mandate has been a barrier, the city unanimously approved a step to double down on the program, making developments of 5 units or more subject to the inclusionary zoning program. Affordable housing calculations for Whitefish translate to a loan for one of these homes for, on average, approximately $190,000. The average cost of a townhome in Whitefish is at least $300,000, and most new homes start well above $350,000. There is a vast difference between market costs and what inclusionary zoning will allow these homes to sell for. Under inclusionary zoning, affordable units are to be held to the same architectural standards as their non-subsidized neighbors, so the builder or developer is forced to take a massive loss on these units as construction costs would remain the same. In the interest of time, I would request Mr. Chair, to hand out my written testimony of longer comments, and also a letter that our association had published in the local newspaper. We urge for your support for House Bill 259, as inclusionary zoning does not result in more affordable housing units for communities. It drives up the overall cost of housing, and it places an unreasonable and unfair financial burden on one type of building, and one type of business, the building community. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. If you are out there in online land, if you can make sure you either mute your mic or mute your phone, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. We will now go to Linda Revenaugh online. Please state your name, spell it for us for the record, and who you are associated with.
Ms. Revenaugh, you might need to unmute yourself.
My name is Linda Revenaugh, R-E-V-E-N-A-U-G-H. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and members of the Local Government Committee. I am representing SWMBIA, the Southwest Montana Building Industry Association in Bozeman, Montana. We are a trade association for the residential home building and remodel industry. Our advocacy efforts give a collective voice for our members, small business owners, that may not have the time or fear reprisal for vocalizing their concern that inclusionary zoning is not working for our community. The Bozeman Community Housing Needs Assessment states that close to 6,000 new homes in 5 years will have to be built to match projected demands of population and job growth. In the City of Bozeman, 770 residential units were built in 2019 and 893 in 2020. The mandatory inclusionary zoning program has produced in total 17 homes. The 2020 Bozeman Community Program annual report says that 7 Bozeman homebuyers have each received a $10,000 down payment assistance to purchase a home. At the same time, the Gallatin Association of Realtors' latest report reflects a 28% increase in the average home sales price from January of 2020 to January of 2021. And the inventory of our homes for sale has dropped over 77.5%. Meanwhile, areas outside of Bozeman are seeing more homes built. Belgrade, which does not have an inclusionary zoning, may now surpass Bozeman. Requiring the housing industry to provide affordable housing is affecting more than just that home builder. It takes an average of 24 different trade contractors to build a home. Just like other taxes, the costs of inclusionary zoning are passed on to housing consumers through higher home prices and higher rents. A recent study by the National Association of Home Builders states that a $1,000 cost increase prices out 665 Montana households. Multiple studies show that the rules that restrict new housing development are a key driver in higher housing prices. 25% of the cost of a single-family home and nearly 30% of a multifamily development is due to regulation. Inclusionary zoning is increasing the price of housing for everyone who doesn't receive one of those small number of subsidized units, and there are many other alternatives that should be considered. Please support House Bill 259. I also have letters of support from two different home builders in Bozeman, and I ask permission to hand out their written letters as well as my testimony. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next online, Adam Hertz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Adam Hertz, HERTZ, from Missoula. I'm a realtor and real estate developer, former president of Habitat for Humanity of Missoula, former member of the Missoula City Council and the state legislature, and was recently appointed to the Montana Board of Housing. I'm not speaking on behalf of any of those agencies. House Bill 259 does technically fall under land use statutes at its core. It's really not a land use bill. HB 259 is a tax bill. Inclusionary zoning is a tax on market rate housing in order to subsidize low-income housing. It is not a functional or sustainable model for housing affordability. Many Montana cities are currently facing a housing affordability crisis due to an incredible housing inventory shortage. Housing demand is greatly outpacing housing supply, which is leading to drastic price increases both for renters and buyers. In Missoula, we've seen the median home price increase approximately 30% over the past 12 months, much of that increase coming over the past 8 or 9 months. At a time when we're facing these incredible supply shortages, inclusionary zoning is creating a disincentive for developers and builders to supply more housing. The industry is facing skilled labor shortages, and the economics of development are becoming more and more challenging. Being forced to increase prices on market rate housing in order to subsidize a component of new housing or make a payment in lieu is simply shifting the cost of subsidized housing onto middle class home buyers and renters. If you as a body wish to subsidize low-income housing, don't do it on the backs of the middle class. Instead, I'd ask you to support a greater contribution to the multifamily coal trust loans offered through the Montana Board of Housing and look at other incentives. If you wish to encourage housing supply on a market basis, I'd encourage you to support housing deregulation, zoning reform, and streamlined regulatory processes. The irony of much of the opposition to this bill cannot be overstated. Cities and elected officials who have refused to legalize housing diversity, who have zoned their cities as blocks of single-family monoliths, who have made bringing new supply to market very difficult, and who have used zoning, a tool created to address public health and safety, as a tool for socioeconomic segregation, are going to tell you that it is the legislature's fault for not addressing housing affordability. Frankly, many of these cities have created zoning codes filled with exclusionary zoning, disallowing dense development and making it difficult to bring new affordable housing to market. Another argument you'll hear against HB 259 is the argument of local control. As a former city council member, it's my belief that local governments are best suited to decide which pothole gets filled where and how to address infrastructure needs and how to operate police and fire departments. That is local control. However, the legislature, rightfully so, has made it unlawful for these cities to enact local income or general sales taxes, regulate the sale of firearms, or increase property taxes at rates more than half the rate of inflation. It is reasonable for the legislature to enact sideboards to ensure local citizens are protected from heavy-handed local government mandates and taxation. For those reasons and others, I'd ask that you do pass House Bill 259. Thank you.
Thank you. We will go into person. Sam Sill, are you out in the, yep, there in the hallway? Sam Sill, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sam Sill, it's S-I-L-L. Here on behalf of the Montana Association of Realtors, we share the concerns that were expressed by the other proponents that inclusionary zoning isn't an effective solution to increasing the provision of affordable housing. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's a price cap, and that all you really accomplish is you shift the cost of housing from the lucky few folks who happen to get one of the inclusionary units to the market rate folks. And you know, in some communities, I'd probably dare say Whitefish and Bozeman are among them. You already have people who are above the median income who aren't going to qualify for one of these affordable subsidized units that are just going to struggle more with affordability trying to purchase or rent a market rate unit in the event of an IZ program being implemented. So I don't see this as being a realistic solution. The realtors share everyone's concerns about affordable housing. In this particular legislative session, we supported House Bill 21, which was a bill that would have allowed some additional authority to the Board of Housing for loans from the Coal Tax Trust Fund for low-income multifamily units. You just heard one of our members supporting the Community Land Trust Bill. We've supported an income tax credit that will allow the state to better leverage federal funds. Certainly on the regulatory side, we've been active. This committee passed out a bill that would allow us to do subdivisions a little bit more cost-effectively, which will benefit consumers. But, you know, those kinds of solutions, I think, are really what we're looking for here, and this bill isn't going to hurt inclusionary zoning. And you know, as I've said, we the realtors are totally committed to addressing affordability, but it's got to be through real solutions and not through inclusionary zoning. We urge you to pass.
Thank you, sir. Next up, Patrick Webb.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Webb with Americans for Prosperity Montana. I won't repeat everything that was said here today, lots of good things. I just want to say, you know, this is a good bill. We appreciate the sponsor bringing it forth, and we do request it do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Tom Murphy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y. I'm a subcontractor from here in Helena, and I'm chairman of the Montana Building Industry Association Government Affairs Committee. This is a bill is about one thing and one thing only, government-imposed price caps on private property sales. It doesn't prevent any types of incentives or collaborative approaches in housing affordability. The housing issues in Montana require precise tools. House Bill 259 gets rid of the damaging sledgehammer that has been proven throughout the country, and even where it has been tried in Montana, to be a failure at producing housing for families. To date, 17 other states have passed similar legislation. There's a new study that came out just this week in Missoula, and it shows one of the biggest hurdles in housing is the high cost of lumber, which has really risen up in this during the pandemic. So housing is less affordable because of lumber, and not necessarily lots at this point, although that's a challenge also. In closing, this is about more than builders. It's about families and their single biggest investment. It caps their ability to sell it at their best possible price and allowing them to move up in the housing market. Mr. Chair, may I please distribute letters from a few of our builder members from around the state, Wade Hoyt of Missoula, Kevin LeBron, Les Bruner, and John Harding, and Greg Beeler, all of Great Falls. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else out in the out hallway for proponents? Do we have any extra proponents online, Mr. Cole, for 259? None online. We will go to opponents of House Bill 259. Just for the record, please state your name, spell it, and who you are associated with. We just to give you a heads up, please make sure you silence your phones, and you have 3 minutes per person. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John MacDonald. Last name is M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D. I'm here today representing the city of Bozeman. I will be real brief. I want to make it clear, too, first of all, nobody that I represent, nobody that I work for has ever suggested that the builders of the development industry is responsible for the housing situation we have. Nor do we believe that it falls on them alone to fix the problem. But we have to have them at the table if we're going to address this issue. I will say this. I think we can do a lot better than the bill that's before this committee. We could put a framework in place for what affordable housing ordinance should look like. We've made that offer to the builders, to the development industry. It was rejected. We make the offer again. I think we can do substantially better than this. I sent around some information to all of the committee members. I hope you will have a chance to take a look at that and ask questions of us about what Bozeman adopted, because not only do I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding, but I think there's been a misrepresentation about the Bozeman ordinance. And I believe, honestly, that the Bozeman Ordinance could be used as a model and potentially the model for how this could be done if we're looking for a way to put some sideboards on this. So a number of years ago in Bozeman, they had this as strictly a voluntary program. The idea was, if you were willing to make one out of every 10 of the homes that you built an affordable home, you would have incentives. Those incentives included expedited permit review, reduced minimum lot size, impact fee subsidies and reimbursements, simultaneous construction of housing and infrastructure, reduced parking requirements, reduction in parkland requirements. All of these were an effort to say to the builders, if you help us with affordable housing, if you help us build those homes, we will help you keep your costs down. We'll ensure that you continue to be able to make money, to have a profit, and hopefully we can speed up the entire process involved. Unfortunately, after 2 years, that wasn't successful. So in 2018, that voluntary provision was sunset. It's important to note, those incentives still exist. All of the incentives that I mentioned still exist for these builders. It has worked. I think one of the proponents suggested that this has somehow failed or that there hasn't been substantial showing from this. It has worked. Right now there are 17 homes that were built that are occupied and owned by families that want to live in Bozeman. By the end, I believe, of the next year, there's going to be 50. That's 50 people in our community that have a place that they can afford. Some of these folks have been on a waiting list for over a year for an affordable housing. I will say this. There are positive impacts. Cash in lieu that the builders have been able to put towards this, $448,000. They have received $76,000 in reimbursement in impact fees, and this program in Bozeman has amounted to $160,000 in down payment assistance for folks in our community. I hope you'll get a chance to ask us more questions about this. I know that the sponsor is hoping to have this fairly quickly, and I know there's a lot of folks, so I will leave it at that. But please, if you have questions on the Bozeman ordinance, call us back up. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for reference, if you have testified, please stay around until we're finished with the hearing, so we may have questions for you. Thank you. Next opponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, S.K. Rossi, R-O-S-S-I. Here on behalf of the City of Missoula, thank you for having me in your committee today. Missoula doesn't actually have an inclusionary zoning ordinance, but we are concerned about the kind of removing of tools from our toolbox to address the affordable housing crisis in Missoula. Right now, the City of Missoula is working on any number of avenues to try to increase affordable housing in the city. They're trying to increase the amount of money they have in their affordable housing trust fund. They're trying to build affordable housing developments in different areas of Missoula. But honestly, at this point, I understand the builders feel like they're kind of solely responsible for building affordable housing in these cities. But right now, in Missoula, the only entities that are building affordable housing are the city government. and that burden is falling completely on the city government because there hasn't been any affordable housing built voluntarily in that city. So every time a new property goes up, they're selling those properties for much higher than market value. Nothing in Missoula is going for just bare market value anymore. It is very expensive to live there. I live in Missoula, and I can tell you from my experience living there and from, you know, driving all over the city, every time I see a construction site, it is not a single family home anymore. We see condos, we see townhomes, we see apartment buildings. There is no kind of mission of Missoula to create some single family home mecca where you can't have multi-unit homes around there. The problem is that the building of affordable housing isn't happening. Housing is going up, but that housing is not affordable housing, and it is not something that students can afford. It's not something that middle-income folks can afford. It is not something that low-income folks can afford at all. And at this point, we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we build a more affordable housing as a city? And I hate to be this blunt about it, but we're trying to figure out how we either build more affordable housing or figure out ways to house our homeless. I mean, our housing situation is dire. So removing those tools that we have now that could be accessible to us in the future, if we can't make a big enough dent, is just going to make things harder for the city and for the residents there. And quite honestly, we all know more people want to move to Montana. We all know more people want to move to Missoula and Bozeman especially. And we have to be able to find homes for those folks, and we have to be able to find homes for the people who already live there and are being pushed out by higher housing costs. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Dorrington. For the record, that's D-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. Here today on behalf of the City of Billings, standing in opposition to HB 259. Like many of the other communities in Montana, Billings also faces challenges with respect to affordable housing. And that's due to a whole host of reasons, many of which we've already talked about. Rising material cost, land cost, regulatory processes, labor, you name it. And from our perspective, we just need to keep all available tools on the table and at our disposal for addressing affordable housing needs in our community, both current and in the future. Inclusionary zoning is one of those tools. Has the City of Billings ever used it? No, they haven't. So why are we here? It's because the bill that we have before us is a vehicle that would deprive the city and other local governments from even considering whether inclusionary zoning could be effectively used in the community to help alleviate housing issues. Billings recently spent 3 years crafting updated zoning codes for the city, involved intricate discussions about affordable housing and whether inclusionary zoning should or should not be used. Ultimately, at the end of the day, inclusionary zoning was not included as a strategy in that project recode. But it was that ability for the local community to have that discussion, to debate the issue, and decide for themselves whether those types of zoning strategies would work or shouldn't work. And that's what's important to us, is to be able to have that debate. And this bill, just frankly, it takes it away. Before closing, I do want to say I do appreciate the comments from the good representative who brought the bill, and we understand the intent of the bill. We get where you're coming from, but we just ask this committee to let local governments like Billings, like Missoula, like Bozeman, let us keep our local decision-making authority so that we can continue to craft solutions to local problems in a way that fits the needs of our local community. So we respectfully ask for a do not concur. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Next opponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Allison Reinhardt, R-E-I-N-H-A-R-D-T, and I'm here on behalf of MASS, the Montana Associated Students. We would just like to add that local governments should be able to decide if they'd like to implement inclusionary zoning policies, and we believe that these policies would greatly benefit students and recent graduates. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next opponent on House Bill 259. Is there any opponents out in the hallway? Seeing none. Mr. Cole, do we have any online?
Do, Mr. Chair. First up, Jack Rank.
Jack Rank.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. If you can spell your name and your affiliation, sir.
Of course, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jack Rink. That's R-I-N-C-K for the record. I'm here representing the interests of the Associated Students of the University of Montana, and we rise in opposition to House Bill 259. So during both the first hearing in the House and in this hearing, the sponsor and proponents of this bill agreed with us that affordable housing is a large issue in Montana. I find this especially true in our state's growing cities like Missoula and Bozeman. And the sponsor noted that inclusionary zoning has failed to address the issue of affordable housing. And I guess to this, I have two counter arguments. First, rarely is a single policy a solve-all for a comprehensive issue such as housing affordability. Just because inclusionary zoning is not the silver bullet in addressing all of our housing needs, it does not mean it needs to be curtailed to the extent that this bill proposes. Inclusionary zoning should remain an option in tandem with other policies. And I guess second, I've heard countless times this session notions of local control. Still is not local control, simply. The first sentence at the beginning of new sections 1 and 2, quote, a local governing body may not. This bill limits municipalities to choose for themselves policy that works best. I sincerely urge a do not pass on House Bill 259. And thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll go next. Go ahead, Mr. Cole.
Next, Mr. Chair, John Mulfeld.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is John Mulfeld, M-U-H-L-F-E-L-D. I'm the mayor of the city of Whitefish, and of course, I'm here today representing the city of Whitefish, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments and express my opposition to House Bill 259. Before our affordable housing program was implemented in Whitefish about 2 years ago, the only mechanism the city had to encourage the creation of voluntary affordable housing was through a planned unit development cash in lieu program that provided developers a 50% density bonus. They agreed to deed restrict a certain percentage of homes affordable. Every few years, the city would adjust the cash in lieu amount to try and incentivize builders to take advantage of the density bonus, and quite frankly, it did not work. And contrary to previous comments you've heard today from Building Association representatives, the PUD approach to affordable housing in Whitefish failed, and we produced a mere 6 deed-restricted affordable homes in Whitefish over a 5-year period. The affordability gap in Whitefish has grown exponentially over the past 10 years, as I'm sure you're aware. In 1999, I purchased a modest 2-bedroom home in downtown Whitefish for $68,000. Today, that same home would sell for no less than about $400,000. This year alone, the average sale price for a single-family home in Whitefish, I believe, was $175,000. As we all know, unfortunately, wages have certainly not grown commensurate with housing prices, and this certainly isn't a problem unique to Whitefish. It's happening statewide. In Whitefish, as the affordability gap has grown, we have seen our teachers, nurses, firefighters, short order cooks, waiters and waitresses, and retail workers seek alternative housing options outside of Whitefish because they simply cannot afford homes in town. Today, and based on our housing needs assessment, over 54% of the Whitefish workforce in commutes from surrounding communities. However, lack of affordable housing stock is certainly not just a Whitefish issue. Over the past several years since we adopted our housing needs assessment and program, our neighboring communities, including Columbia Falls, Kalispell, and even the county, are experiencing escalating housing prices to the point where affordability has become a very real issue value-wide. So I ask you, where are the workers who are the building blocks of our businesses supposed to be? There are 2 take-home messages I would like to leave with you today. The first, which I hope you find most compelling, is that the Whitefish Affordable Housing Program was actually initiated by the business community and the Chamber of Commerce, representing the interests of hundreds of businesses in Whitefish, not my council, not our government. In 2016, when many businesses were trimming hours of operation, closing on certain days because they could not hire workers, they approached and pleaded for city governments to do something to help keep business open because the workforce was dwindling. And why? Of course, because of the lack of affordable workforce housing. Wanting to be responsive to our business community, we rolled up our sleeves, and in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, we began the hard 2-year process of creating an equitable program that would meet the needs of our town. When I refer to equitability...
Mr. Monfield, if you could please wrap up.
I would just state that I would please ask that you not vote in favor of this bill. It is certainly pro-business from the business community, and we ask that you keep local decision-making at the local level. We know what's best for our town. We appreciate your vote of no on House Bill 259.
Thank you, Mr. Monfield. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chair, Alana Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alana Wolf. That's A-L-A-N-N-A-W-U-L-F. And I am with Big Sky 55 Plus, which is a nonprofit organization that advocates for public policies that benefit seniors. Fixed income seniors who rent need rentals they can afford, and fixed income seniors who own their own houses need relief from rising property taxes in rapidly escalating markets. Seniors are also highly dependent on the essential workers in their communities finding housing they can afford. They include EMTs, nurses, home care workers, nursing home attendants, and many more. Seniors also need diverse communities where their own children and grandchildren will be able to live, will be able to afford to live, and find housing that they can afford. This is a local control issue. Despite erroneous assertions that local controls reach ends at filling potholes. How we address affordable housing in Billings versus Bozeman versus Missoula versus the Flathead is going to look different. We should not take away the ability for municipalities to determine what is most effective in their own communities to address the affordable housing problems that will only grow across our state. Taking away tools in a city's toolkit to address affordable housing is antithetical to creating solutions. We urge you to vote no on House Bill 259. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Next, Mr. Chair, Kevin Gartland.
Mr. Gartland, you there? Mr. Gartland?
Mr. Chair, I see he's unmuted himself. Do we want to try coming back to him?
Let's roll back to him. Let's go to the next one.
Next, we have Terry Cunningham.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Terry Cunningham, C-U-N-N-I-N-G-H-A-M, and I'm the Deputy Mayor of Bozeman. I speak today on behalf of the Bozeman City Commission. My goal is to clear up some misconceptions about inclusionary zoning, or IZ, that you can make an informed vote today. The City of Bozeman has more experience than any other city in Montana when it comes to inclusionary zoning. We've had it on the books formally since 2018. You've been told that IZ is, quote, a weapon that is used against developers, unquote. That is not accurate. Developers are an integral part of the process, and their input and suggestions continue to shape and improve the IZ ordinance. We worked hand in glove with the first developer who brought workforce housing units through the IZ process, making valuable tweaks along the way that addressed some of the developer's concerns. The developer had reported that he was able to deliver the homes required under the ordinance and still make a reasonable profit. At the end of the process, eight in that particular project, eight hardworking middle-class Montana families had a place to call home, and the developer let it be known that it was a workable process. We showed the same level of flexibility with the second developer who brought eight units through the IZ process. We approved a plan that allowed them to build townhome units rather than single-family detached homes. It was a compromise that worked well for both parties. The second criticism is that only 17 homes have actually been developed under the IZ ordinance, but that's only because the ordinance is only a couple of years old and it takes a while to get projects through the process. That's about to change. In the last 30 days, I've seen plans for over 50 workforce housing units that will be built as a result of the ordinance. We are finally gaining traction with IZ, and now is not the time to pull the rug from under 50 hardworking Montanans, middle-class families, who would otherwise be occupying these homes. The families that purchase these workforce housing units are salt of the earth Montanans, our teachers, our firefighters, our middle managers, who are being priced out of the market by home buyers relocating from out of state. I've met some of these families, and I've seen the joy and relief on their faces when they get the keys to a place that they can call home. The inclusionary zoning ordinance was adopted by the Bozeman City Commission after a thorough public and inclusive process. Local elected officials throughout the state have very few tools in our toolbox to address the statewide affordable housing crisis. Don't take away yet another tool. If the legislature has issues with inclusionary zoning, the right way to address this is to set some reasonable standards and let us work in concert with the development community, just like we always have, to craft a workable solution. This bill isn't the right solution to the IZ issue. I ask you to vote no on this bill and allow us to work collectively with our partners in the development community to address the issue that the Montana way, through frank conversations and constructive compromise. Thank you for this, considering this testimony and for your service to the state of Montana.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Next up, Mr. Chair, Karen Hilding.
Yes, this is Karen Hilding. And it's Hilding, H-I-L-D-I-N-G. But thank you very much for the opportunity to speak in opposition to House Bill 259. I've worked as an engineer for the City of Whitefish for over 25 years. Today I'm speaking as a Whitefish resident, though I will mention some of my experience in helping reconstruct Whitefish infrastructure over the past 25 years. As you may be aware, Whitefish has very strong roots. The Baker brothers came here in the 1880s, logged the area, built the first roads, water and sewer system, and Ernie Baker's grandfather provided the land for the schools, provided the gravel and land for the railroad. Baker Avenue was named after his family. I discussed this bill yesterday with Ernie Baker. Ernie explained his opposition to the bill. He said, quote, anything that can be done to keep housing affordable should be done. He further stated, quote, if everyone commutes to work, we lose the hometown atmosphere of being a real family town. I recall some, you know, developers of a nearby subdivision called High Point telling the city council about 8 years ago that their project would create housing for teachers and locals, since the homes would be located just a few blocks from the schools. Well, homes in High Point are now selling for over $1 million. There's one home for sale in that neighborhood that is listed at $2.2 million. Meanwhile, the majority of city employees live outside of the city of Whitefish. I'm one of the few city workers that still lives within city limits. So though the roots of Whitefish are strong, the price of homes is causing these roots to be cut. The families that built the town don't have this type of money. Few kids growing up in this town will be able to return to live here. So as someone who has spent 25 years helping to build a vibrant community with resilient infrastructure, my work would have been wasted as it would have helped create a town without real people. The Baker brothers and folks that came after them didn't sacrifice to create a beautiful town to have it sold off as an exclusive playground. Builders in our area are busier than I've ever seen. At least the builders that I've talked to and whose permits I've worked on approving. There's a 400-home residential development in Kalispell was recently canceled because of a lack of workers. Development in Whitefish will not be slowed by affordable housing requirements. It may be slowed by a lack of workers and rising material costs. So please let local communities address their housing issues based on input from local residents. And thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Next person, Mr. Cole.
Next, Mr. Chair, Kelly Lynch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, my name is Kelly Lynch with the Montana League of Cities and Towns, and today I'm also speaking on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. I want to put our members' inclusionary housing ordinances in the context of what's happening nationally. These programs have created approximately 50,000 affordable home ownership units and 125,000 affordable rental units since their inception nearly three decades ago. You can't compare them. There's a wide diversity in terms of these programs. They all are are structured to fit their community needs, including when the requirements are triggered, how many units must be provided, what incentives are offered, and the affordability requirements imposed, even between Bozeman and Whitefish. You've heard about that today. Courts across the country have upheld these programs, and the United States Supreme Court recently refused to hear a constitutional challenge to an inclusionary housing program. The communities of Bozeman and Whitefish had an extensive year-long dialogue with the public regarding these ordinances, and their local elected officials made a decision that these requirements best fit the needs of their communities at this time. You've heard testimony today that these programs raise the price of market housing, but the proponents haven't demonstrated any causal link between the Bozeman and Whitefish ordinances and the rising prices of homes in these communities. Just making that claim does not make it so. There are other documented factors contributing to soaring housing prices nationwide, and they don't have anything to do with these two modest local programs. First, cost of lumber has increased more than 180% since a year ago, adding an average of $24,000 to the price of a home. 96% of home builders nationally reported that building material prices were the top challenge to building homes in 2020, followed closely by material availability and labor costs. A recent report done by Missoula Association of Realtors reflected the same challenges. That report found that all soft costs together, that includes permits, impact fees, architectural designs, and holding costs, amounted to only 15% of the total cost of a home. The remaining 85% of costs were hard building material costs. And that total doesn't include the labor costs. Taking away guaranteed affordable units will do nothing to alleviate these market constraints. Make no mistake, if you pass this bill, you will be removing one of the few tools our most expensive communities have to provide actual home ownership to Montanans that can't otherwise purchase a home. These affordable units have never been as important as they are right now. If you pass this bill, you will be stopping the construction of affordable units. Mr. Chairman, we respectfully ask for a do not concur on HB 259.
Thank you. Next person, Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chair, I will try and see if we can hear Kevin Gartland this time.
Mr. Gartland, you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Very good. Thank you. Yep. Kevin Gartland, I'm with the Whitefish Chamber of Commerce, Executive Director. And the Chamber of Commerce here in Whitefish strongly opposes HB 259 and its attempt to take local control away from Montana communities like Whitefish, who've worked long and hard to address critical problems that require a local solution. As the mayor mentioned earlier, the inclusionary zoning program created by the Whitefish community is not the result of liberal Whitefish politicians shoving their radical philosophies down the throats of our businesses and our residents. This program and the larger strategic housing plan were created at the behest of the Whitefish business community. I can tell you this because I'm the one who went to City Council 5 years ago at the request of my board of directors to ask for the city's help in putting together a plan for an issue that my 450 business members believe is the most critical obstacle not only to maintaining our economy but to growing it, and that's a complete and total absence of housing that's affordable to the folks who drive our economy, our workforce. As a result, we have a critical workforce shortage, jobs not only in the tourism industry sector but also throughout all segments of our area's economy. So despite a booming economy, the emergence of Whitefish as an international destination resort, our employers struggle to fill essential job openings year-round. We've been forced to raise starting wages to $15 or more for dishwashers, housekeepers, and other entry-level workers, and they still can't find applicants. Our workers, unable to find housing in the local area, commute from as far as Libby and Eureka, 50 to 90 miles one way, simply to find work in Whitefish, take a job, and eventually they tire of that commute and they take a job in the community where they live and work. Inclusionary zoning is used by communities across the country. We've heard that. It's a tool we need to have to make sure Whitefish remains a real town where folks can afford to work, live, and play. Our residents here don't want to become an Aspen or a Jackson Hole where the jet set price locals out of the market. That causes us to lose the soul of our community, our working young men and women, and our working families. Our community worked long and hard to craft this solution for our workforce housing crisis. It's right for Whitefish, and we oppose HB 259 and any effort to usurp control of our local communities and our residents by passing a special interest bill that benefits a single industry to the detriment of others. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Bob Horn, Mr. Chair.
Say it again. Oh, Bob Horn. Can you hear us, Bob Horn?
I can. Thank you.
You're up.
Chairman of the committee, my name is Robert Horn, H-O-R-N-E, and I'm a retired community planner. I was a community planner for over 44 years, 21 of which were in Montana. I now reside in Whitefish, and I'm a volunteer member of the Whitefish Workforce Housing Strategic Planning Committee, but I'm speaking today strictly for myself. I've heard today several misstatements on the part of the proponents. I don't have time to go into those. I will tell you that I was planning director in Jackson, Wyoming in the mid-1990s whenever we started our inclusionary and linkage programs there. It takes time to produce results. You can't look at Whitefish and say, oh, you haven't produced any units in 2 years. It has taken about 20 years for Jackson to produce the housing they have. Today, you can go online and find that they are listing over 60 homes that they have sold or are being rented, and that doesn't include the homes that they have produced through other means other than inclusionary zoning. If there is a concern out there that communities around Montana, like Great Falls, Billings, Havre, or Miles City, are going to try and set up inclusionary programs of their own, that fear is unfounded, and I'll tell you why. Due respect to those communities, but it won't work in those communities. They don't have a strong enough housing market to make it work. If your community has a robust housing market with high demand and escalating prices for all types of residential units, as we do in Whitefish, you're probably pricing out or at least cost burdening a number of your essential workers, like your police officers, your firefighters, nurses and med techs, teachers, among others. And I did hear this described as low-income housing. That nothing could be farther from the truth. What inclusionary zoning allows you to do is to harness a bit of that highly lucrative market to provide permanently affordable housing for at least some of those essential workers. Now, we have some great builders in Whitefish, but they did not create the hot market that we're trying to harness a piece of. That market was created by the community. And again, that market is very lucrative for developers, builders, realtors, building suppliers, lenders, and everyone in the development industry. If it were not that lucrative, if they weren't doing well in that market, we wouldn't be asking anything of them. Whitefish is a very desirable community and a great place to live, work, and recreate. And yes, Whitefish is located in a beautiful natural setting. But beyond that, Whitefish has aggressively used the resort tax, improvement districts, other resources to provide high-quality community amenities like streetscapes, parks, a national class trail system that brings even more visitors to town. So in reality, the reality is that Whitefish is simply harnessing that active market, again, created in the first place to get cost-controlled, deed-restricted housing units so a portion of our essential workers can actually live in the community that they serve. That, in turn, makes Whitefish even more diverse and vibrant and even more desirable for a live, work, and play experience. Ladies and gentlemen, when you build great places, that's where people want to be. In conclusion, please allow us to continue to grow the Legacy Homes program and to make Whitefish an even greater community. Please table this unfortunate and harmful bill. Thank you for your time and consideration this afternoon.
Thank you. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Next, Mr. Chair, Mary Flowers.
Mary, you may unmute your mic.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm Mary Flowers, and I'm here representing the Montana Smart Growth Coalition. My name is spelled M-A-Y-R-E, and my last name is Flowers, F-L-O-W-E-R-S. And I want to speak in support of the other opponents of this bill who have preceded me, but I want to echo some points that I think deserve repeating. Housing cost increases are not being driven by programs like the Legacy Homes program. In fact, housing cost increases of the nature that have been quoted at this hearing are driven by the attractiveness of our state and the desire of people to live here. These rising costs are exactly why we need programs like inclusionary zoning in the communities that locally choose to adopt these programs. It's not right for everyone, but it is right, and it should be a tool in the toolbox. Increasing supply of housing does not equal affordable housing. There's been testimony today that points to the fact that voluntary programs have not worked. We need more tools to provide affordable housing and to increase the supply of housing, which inclusionary zoning does by providing incentives for bonuses. I sent written testimony to the committee, and in that I included some of the benefits, the sheet that outlines for developers the benefits that are provided under inclusionary zoning in the city of Whitefish. You can reduce the lot size by 20%. You can increase the density by 20%. You can reduce the lot width by 10% and increase the lot coverage by 10% for subdivisions. These are very valuable benefits in addition to reducing parking. These mean that the assertion that the development community is asked to bear the total cost of these programs is totally inaccurate, because these costs are shared by the local government and by the residents of the community who have supported this zoning being put in place. I also want to point out that residents of Whitefish as taxpayers and those of Bozeman who have gone through extensive public processes for these this legacy or inclusionary zoning have spent significant tax dollars to achieve these goals. This bill would certainly wipe out that whole investment of taxpayers and should not be allowed. Finally, there was a repeated assertion that these programs...
Ms. Flowers, if you can wrap it up.
I will, sir. Thank you. Assertion that these programs don't work across the country is simply false. Over 866 jurisdictions across the United States use these types of programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Next, Mr. Chair, Jennifer James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer James, J-A-M-E-S. I represent the American Institute of Architects, the Montana chapter. And the biggest thing, we have members from across the state, and not all of them agree on the issue one way or another on inclusionary zoning, but the one thing that they all do agree on is that this should be a conversation that's had at the local level. We had some hard discussions about how to testify and came down to that final summary that we oppose House Bill 259 because of the fact that we feel like this should be a conversation that happens at the local level. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next one, Mr. Cole.
Just a reminder, folks online, if you're hoping to provide testimony, please raise your hand. It's at the bottom of your screen, a little yellow hand. Next, Mr. Chair, Rebecca Norton.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Norton, N-O-R-T-O-N. I'm calling from Whitefish. I am on our local city council and the strategic housing committee. However, I'm speaking as a citizen, having lived here for 25 years. I am opposed to this bill. I don't find it necessary whatsoever. We need all the tools that we can get to solve this very, very serious problem of not having adequate housing for our workers and actually the people that live here. I've been fortunate to be a hand therapist with my own practice in the downtown heart of Whitefish for 17 years, so I've heard many, many stories of the locals and treat families intergenerationally. Everybody wants to live and work in the same city that they've grown up in, and these programs would allow us to at least try to achieve that. I think it's premature to say that they don't work when ours is only a few years old. We had two so far go through the program. One wanted to do a cash in lieu because it was too high end to consider another way, and the other one was just in the wrong location. That there was too much opposition from the neighbors because it was near three schools. But we do anticipate getting more builders who are interested in doing this type of work. Another thing I'd like to mention is that we are inundated with new people coming to Montana now, and people buy property without even looking at it. They buy it over the phone. There's multiple backup offers. The housing prices are going high. We have to do something. And so by taking this away from the towns that need to solve these problems for no real reason, it just seems premature to me. I would really encourage you to defeat this bill. Let these tools work their way through organically through the process. We have an annual review done on the IZ program in Whitefish. If it doesn't work, we won't stick with it. We'll find something else that will work. But we do need the opportunity to try to come up with real solutions during this time of unprecedented growth in our real estate market. We really want to have a balanced community where people can live and work, recreate, pray together, and hold their grandbabies, walk down the street and see their neighbors. And if we don't really commit to some of these long-term goals, we might actually sell out to just be a recreational capital for people to come from all over, but not be a real home for anybody. So please defeat HB 259, and thank you very much for your service.
Thank you. Mr. Cole, next one.
Mr. Chair, that's it for opponents on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Do we have any information out in the hallway? None. Do we have any information online, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Cheryl Cohen.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, and I serve as the Housing Division Administrator with the Department of Commerce, as well as the Interim Division Administrator with the Commerce Community Development Division. We administer a variety of funds for the development and rehabilitation of affordable rental homes for Montanans, and I'm available for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Seeing as there are more informational, has there anybody actually show up outside in case? Okay. Seeing no more. Committee, do you have any questions? Mr. Pope or Senator Pope?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, a quick question for Mayor Mulfeld.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mulfeld, thank you for joining our committee conversation this afternoon. You would be in a good position maybe to give us some ideas about the impact of, I think the Chamber of Commerce testimony was that it's very hard for workers in your community to find housing. In Bozeman, that means that folks are starting to drive 20, 30, 40 minutes a day to get to work, to a work, a job. Do you have that dynamic going on? And what is the cost, if that is the case in Whitefish, what is the cost of infrastructure and essentially urban spread, if you don't mind addressing that? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pope. As I indicated, the 2016 housing needs assessment that we completed, which was based on statistics and data derived the prior 5 years, I believe, indicated that at that time, again, we're talking 5 years ago, about 54% of our workforce housing was in commuting from other communities. As Kevin Garland, our executive director of the Chamber of Commerce, indicated today, we're now seeing employees in commute from towns as far as Libby and Eureka, Montana, to tune of an hour to an hour and 45 minutes. You know, as a local municipality with a large resort component, we're already facing significant burdens with maintaining and expanding infrastructure, including our roads, our highways, you know, sewer and water, etc. we're doing everything we can to try to promote alternative modes of transportation within town, but when we do have folks in commuting from other areas, it obviously places a significant burden on our infrastructure. And so, to your point, yes, it's very burdensome and something we're already struggling with in the community without having this program stripped from our toolbox.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor, thank you. One more question, and that would be, in the event that a bill like this were to pass through state government and become law, where does that put your community in terms of its current planning process for urban affordability and whatnot?
Well, I think it would set us back substantially. As I indicated, prior to this program, when we were incentivizing development of affordable housing through our PUD chapter, you know, we had a mere 5 or 6 units developed over a 15-year period. And so we'd be right back to that same situation. And as Kevin mentioned, we invested close to $100,000 in public-private partnership dollars to develop this program. So it would be a significant setback for our community and the people that want to live, work, and recreate in Whitefish.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Margeau? Senator Margeau, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Margeau works too. I think I'll ask a question to Mr. McDonald.
Mr. McDonald?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Margeau.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. McDonald, just going to see if you could explain a little bit more to the committee. Me and Mr. Friedel that are sitting in here today, and tell us a little bit more about the homes that the ordinance is actually going to apply to and what incentives there are in the ordinance. Specifically, you know, we heard a lot from, well, my community, but various communities throughout the state, so I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit more.
Sure, Mr. Chairman and Senator Margeau. The Bozeman ordinance applies only to single-family homes and townhouses. It does not apply to rental units or apartments, for one. And I mentioned I was trying to be brief on this, but I'll go through some of the incentives again and then some of the other options that are available. Expedited permit review is one that was put in when this was voluntary and as a holdover since the voluntary component has sunset. Reduced minimum lot size, impact fee subsidies, and again that figure in the 2 years that Bozeman's been in place is $76,000 in impact fees that have been reimbursed to those builders that have taken part. Simultaneous construction of housing and infrastructure, reduced parking requirements, I believe, and the deputy mayor may correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I believe for a 3-bedroom house, they've reduced it to a 2-parking space minimum or requirement, excuse me, and then reduction in parkland set-asides as well. Look, I can give you an example, too. So if you're a builder and you are building, let's say, 15 new homes and the 10% applies there, so you would essentially be, the requirement would be 10% of that is 1.5 homes. So you would have one home that would be set aside for affordable housing or workforce housing, and then that balance you could use, or you could have cash in lieu, for instance, or you could donate land. That's been used as well in Bozeman. So those are some of the other ideas that we've come up with in Bozeman to try to incentivize this more and hopefully encourage more of the builders there to want to be involved with that and to take part in that.
Thank you. That's good for me, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody online have a question? Mr. Senator Pope? You're muted, Senator Pope.
I apologize. I was trying to stand down.
You're fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, real quick question for Ms. Holm, please.
Ms. Holm?
Informational. Ms. Cohen, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope?
Thank you for coming to our committee this afternoon. I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you would, to give us a very summary 40,000-foot view of what I would call a gap analysis. What's the gap analysis from your office's perspective of things you're trying to accomplish and things that are unattainable in the world of affordable housing, workforce housing, affordability, as you see it in terms of your programs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pope, that is a difficult question to answer on the fly. I think I can say that for our low-income housing tax credit program, we're able to allocate about $32 million a year. We're typically oversubscribed with applications on at least a 3-to-1 ratio. And it's not that we don't have the applications coming in. These applications are qualified and they're good projects and worthy projects. And I believe our Board of Housing would love to award all of them, but we just don't have the funds available from the competitive 9% program. We are working to increase the utilization of private activity bonds for the development of multifamily rental properties. So that's something that we're striving to do. The Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 did include a fix to the non-competitive 4% tax credit, and that is increasing the attractiveness of that credit to the investor community, and so we have been receiving more inquiries for that program. But I think one of the things I wanted to add is for the inclusionary zoning with the city of Bozeman and the city of Whitefish, we have had a number of projects that we have awarded that have also received funds in part from those inclusionary zoning programs. So this has been a leverage source for some of our development. In total for the city of Bozeman, it's been approximately $1.025 million. And in the city of Whitefish, there was a project that received a reduced land rate in part from the inclusionary zoning ordinance. So it's a big problem to solve, and it depends on your perspective of what's causing the housing shortage as to the best approach to solve this problem. But there is a considerable need for additional supply of affordable rental homes in Montana, and our programs are quite oversubscribed.
Thank you, Ms. Cohen. Mr. Chair, I'd like one more question of Deputy Mayor Cunningham, if I might.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Mayor Cunningham, if you are able to be on. I don't see you yet. There we go. Deputy Mayor, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Because I'm from Bozeman, we're in a firefight here. It's pretty much our primary and most prioritized issue for the city, for all the reasons we've heard this afternoon. Could you give us an example of other things that the city is doing outside of this inclusionary zoning that might be compatible, but also, you know, what the program looks like, and, you know, how challenging is it to find ways to actually create housing in the kind of market we're facing right now?
Great question. As you well know, the answer is we are trying everything that we can. And so we have an action plan that has 18 different strategies and 75 different action items. We are looking at our building code through the lens of affordability and looking to completely rewrite that building code. We're looking at our engineering standards to find how we can make it more efficient for builders to build in compact neighborhoods. We're working with partners who are landowners to try to incentivize them to unlock those lands in partnership with us, in partnership with developers, to create more units. We're working with nonprofits to stand up homeless shelters and work with them through wraparound projects where we provide housing to those who need housing. So along the entire spectrum, we are pulling out all the stops, and inclusionary zoning is one thing that we have that allows us to develop affordable housing, but it's vital. It is absolutely essential, and taking it away really will hamstring us in our ability, again, to work in concert, to work in partnership, to work right alongside developers as they come through this ordinance and work their way through site plans, etc. So we are pulling out all the stops, and we are doing it in concert with the development community. to try to find real workable solutions here on the ground in Bozeman. Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, one quick follow-up. This will be my last question.
Proceed.
I might. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Mayor, you know, the public and the taxpayers of the city of Bozeman, in theory, would support this because you're an elected official and you follow the needs of your constituents. Would you like to talk for a half second about the public process and the kind of support you've gotten in town or otherwise? I mean, what has been your experience and what is that public process? I assume it's pretty robust.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, thank you for that question. It is the issue here in Bozeman. We have a 63% increase over 5 years in the cost of detached housing. The process that we use is open and inclusive. When we developed our Affordable Housing Action Plan, we had every member of the community at the table. We had MSU, we had the building community, we had the realtors, we had the chamber. Everyone was involved in this discussion, not only for the development of the action plan, but also those same folks had the ability to attend the robust hearings that we had. And again, our community is crying out for affordable housing, and they're electing those people who are working for those solutions. So it is very much on the mind of taxpayers and residents here in Bozeman, Mr. Chair and Senator Pope.
Deputy Mayor, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for letting me have the time. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Anybody out there in TV land that has a question? Seeing none, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I appreciate a great discussion today. My husband and I have been in the building industry for 25 years. We have never built a $1 million home. Why not? Because we've never had a customer that could afford a $1 million home. We work hard to give a home, to build a home for families that they can afford. I think all builders, I would assume, do that, because if they didn't, they wouldn't have any customers and they wouldn't be in business. It's what we do. I heard comments about builders maybe not being willing to come to the table. I deny that that's the case. I think builders are willing to come to the table, and they do. I've heard of many companies that are involved in Habitat for Humanity and other organizations that work to provide affordable housing. I was excited to hear from Deputy Mayor Cunningham that builders in Bozeman sat at the table with them and worked on incentives for affordable housing in their community. And I believe that incentives do work, and it takes many different people together, coming together and brainstorming, thinking of ideas to deal with this crisis that we have. It is a crisis, I understand. But I think we all need to work together and to force an industry to compel, as it says in the bill, to require an industry to set prices at a certain price point. It's just not realistic. House Bill 259 addresses what can occur when the entire burden of cost and compliance is forced on a single industry. It doesn't deny a tool to address affordable housing. It takes away a weapon that has been proven damaging across the country and in some of the locations that have already attempted to use it here in Montana. And I urge a due pass on House Bill 259. Thank you very much, committee members, for your time today.
Thank you, Representative. Do you have anybody in mind in the event this passes?
Senator Carl Glenn has worked very closely with me on this legislation, and I think he would be terrific. Thank you for asking.
Representative, we'll make sure that Glenn knows as soon as we're done with the bill.
Thank you.
That ends the hearing on House Bill 259. Thank you. Committee, are there anything out there for the good of the community or committee before I close? Seeing none, you guys have...
Chair.
Senator Chair,
We'll be doing executive action on two of the bills for sure on Monday, and we should be also following up on the additional bill. Hopefully we'll have some information from the DRNC so we can finish up the other bill we had on Wednesday, and we'll have three new bills on Monday.
Thank you, Senator Gauthier. Senator S., do you have something to say?
You did a fine job, Senator Friedel. I was listening to you as I went down the highway.
Well, you stay safe out there. You guys stay safe out there. You guys have a great weekend. See you guys on Monday. Adjourned.